are listening to The Caregivers with Lon Kiefer.
Hey there. Yeah, you. I'm talking to you. You might be a caregiver. Hey, I don't know. You might not even know. Welcome home to the Caregivers Podcast, where you are never alone. My name is Lon Kiefer, and I am a caregiver, and I'm your host, who is sometimes known as Doc, the Defender of Caregivers. And for those of you that don't know what we're doing here, we're talking to the caregivers of the world, whether they be professional or personal family caregivers, in an effort to make sure that no one is ever alone, even if your companion is just a voice on a podcast. So this was a pretty cool episode that almost didn't happen. Our guest said no, then he said yes, and then we had scheduling difficulties, and he said yes again, and we went ahead and did it. And I didn't even know until halfway through the podcast when he was explaining his own story as to how lucky I was, because it's not so much a what is his availability, it's sometimes who he is and how he can present himself at any given moment. And I won't steal his thunder, because he does a much better job of explaining that to you than I could ever do. So please join me in welcoming my now friend, James Hamilton.
James Hamilton, I cannot thank you enough for joining us on the Caregivers Podcast. How are you?
This is great. I'm thrilled to be here.
Yeah. Well, I'll give you a chance to hold judgment on that until later. That may, you know. So tell us, let's just jump right into it. I have a saying in the Defender of Caregivers world where I say, honor yourself as you care for others. So please, honor yourself as we share with others. Let us know where we can find you, what you're all about, anything you would like us to know that's important to you.
Well, this is really a tremendous opportunity to be with this Caregivers Podcast and to really able to relate to caregivers. I'm actually, I guess, an anomaly for what you would normally be talking with, because I am that person receiving care. In 2018, I was not only a professional college student, having been through many universities and studied a variety of subjects, including neuroscience, biology, anatomy, physiology, and was planning on going pre-med to neuroscience, especially in the research field. At the time, I was teaching high school in San Antonio, Texas, and I at one point at school forgot my name and then forgot where I was and what I was supposed to be doing. I had a student, thank goodness, go to get another teacher, and they said, there's something wrong with Mr. Hamilton. I mean, something more wrong than normal. So they got me some help. I went to the doctor, and they said, well, you may have had a medication imbalance or short-term memory loss, but I don't think it's anything to worry about. Well, about a week later, it happened again, and thankfully, I was back at the hospital, and this time it was for a little bit of an extended stay. I was there for about a month going through a barrage of testing, and it turns out on one particular day, the doctors came in and they handed me a pamphlet, and they said, you have VAD, and we're going to have you talk to a psychiatrist about the dying process. And I thought, VAD? How could I possibly have a venereal disease, and what does that have to do with memory loss? Later I discovered, oh no, VAD stands for vascular dementia. So since then, and I thought, well, dementia, how can I have dementia? I was 57 years old at the time. I thought dementia meant, well, old people forget stuff, so I didn't think I was that old yet, and yeah, I had some memory problems, but it had taken me by obviously quite a shock. So since then, I call it my dementia journey. I have written a book about my journey with dementia, what it's like to be a person with dementia, and related to caregivers, what they go through dealing with me. So it's been an unusual approach to it, I suppose, because I've been blessed to have the ability at this point with proper medication and diet and exercise to still be able to communicate to others about what dementia is and provide support and create additional awareness. So you can find me a lot of the time online. I do live in an assisted living facility in Texas, but I'm online on Facebook at Dementia Family Friends and Caregivers Group. My little group I started hoping to get maybe 50 people involved and to get some caregivers out there and to get some memory care specialists. And I was really excited to see if I could get 50 people and thought, well, maybe I could spread the word about what dementia really is. And since then, my little group has become almost 3,000 in 59 countries. I've also taken online courses and become a certified dementia professional. I can't become a practitioner because, well, I have the disease and I can't even drive a car, so. But at least I can still use both my personal experience and the knowledge that I've accrued to help not only other persons with dementia, but family members, friends, and caregivers to understand this is what dementia really is all about. It's not just Alzheimer's. There's 100 different types of cognitive impairment. So it's become, I've been quite an incredible advocate of the disease. So I always tell people I feel kind of lucky I got it because I've got this wonderful mission now and this purpose that is keeping me going.
Well, that's beautiful. And I mean, a testimony to the, you know, to the outreach that is going on through your Facebook group is that the two of us have met. And, you know, I must apologize to you and to my listening audience for not being more prepared for the podcast in that I have not read your book. And I would very much like you to promote your book. Can you give us the title and where we can find it? And I'll be the first one to buy a copy.
Well, you know, the best part about that is I can promote the book all day long. It's not yet published.
Oh, okay.
It's written, and I've got a couple of publishers really that want to do something with it. We're just kind of discussing what it is. I'm one of those authors that I guess I'm not a successful author because I don't want to be an author. I just want to take this book and get this information out there to people and make no money. Well, the publishing world kind of frowns on that, and they agree with.
I can teach you how to make no money on a book. I am the foremost authority on making no money on a book.
Well, then you're the guy I want to connect with because that's my goal. Is I don't want this thing to have a lot of people read it and absolutely nobody pay for it. So I am working with the publisher on that.
I'll publish your book. Let me publish your book, please.
If you can make this thing bomb, it's all yours.
Sincerity, go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
The book actually is one of the early symptoms of dementia in a lot of different types of dementia is hallucinations. And one evening when I was still living alone in my apartment, I was preparing stuffed mushrooms, and I'll never forget, they were fabulous, you know, little scallions, some Malbec wine. These things were tremendous. And then I began to have a conversation with a hippopotamus who was also in my kitchen. And the hippopotamus was just a tremendous, tremendous person because the hippopotamus kept giving me some guidance about what to do differently with the mushrooms. And So for about 20 minutes, this hippopotamus was talking to me about the mushrooms and then dementia, and said, you know, you really should write down your thoughts and your journey as you're going through this dementia thing. And, of course, it did later occur to me that more than likely there wasn't actually a hippopotamus in my kitchen, but I felt like I might mention that to my doctor. I was also having who agreed there probably wasn't a hippo in my kitchen. But I was also having another problem that was causing some trouble. At the time, yes, my memory, short-term memory especially, was kind of lapsing. But my long-term memory was playing tricks on me. I would go for days where I had a hard time remembering things. And in the middle of the night, I would remember everything. And I later learned there's a medical term for that, paradoxical lucidity. Well, sadly enough, having been in college for as many years as I had, I have read all the complete works of Shakespeare, and I have memorized the periodic table of elements and all the atomic weights. I've read a great deal of Spanish poetry. I've loved to cook, so I've memorized lots of recipes. And all of those things hit at the same time. So it was an absolutely tremendous migraine and massive overload of information in your brain. So I talked to my doctor about this, and my doctor said, oh, well, it's because the dementia has caused you to, well, you forgot how to remember because your brain doesn't prioritize what is now, what has happened in the past, or what do you need to remember right now, and what can you store for later?
And what was that called again? Paradoxical
lucidity.
Wow.
And so I told him, I said, that is the coolest thing I've ever heard. And he said, paradoxical lucidity. And I said, no, I forgot to remember. And that became the title of my book. I Forgot to Remember, A Personal Journey with Dementia. And in it, I go through all the stages that I've been through, the resources I've discovered, and everything else. So.
Well, in all sincerity, I can help you get that book published in a way that won't cost you much at all and will allow you to just recoup your costs and just I can help you with that. There are means out there, and publishers, unfortunately, are not interested in doing for the greater good. I know that with my book, every time somebody bought it, I felt guilty, so I completely understand that. And you know, I'm your age. I'm 58. And there are many times, whether it's stress or fatigue or what have you, where I judge my own ability to remember something. And I do wonder sometimes, even on this podcast, I can tell that I'm not as quick with words as I once was. And I think a lot of us go through this, you know, is this normal? Is this not normal? And normal is not the right word. But
sure.
I think a lot of us go through this, and I think it's amazing to hear your journey of having gone through it. And you can't help but when you hear someone like you to think of your own situation. Like right now, you know, we're having this conversation. We started it off with this whole coronavirus thing, and every tickle you have or every cough you have, you're like, oh, you know, you magnify the symptoms in your mind. And but was any of that going on with you before you went through your period of forgetting your name and then going to the hospital and getting more of a diagnosis?
Well, the odd part was I was a member of Mensa, meaning my IQ was pretty high up there. I was always fascinated by research. I was always fascinated by intellectual topics and things. And as an avid reader, I think that is one of the things that has helped dramatically slow my progression is my level of brain activity has kept so solid. But as I was teaching high school, I was teaching at the time sciences and advanced mathematics, and I started to discover I was misplacing things in my apartment. I found my briefcase in the oven. I discovered a backpack where I had graded some papers and my reading glasses in my refrigerator. And I came to the realization that's probably not normal. So that kind of put me on that quest of, and this is something I would recommend for everybody, is there is normal memory loss as you go through the aging process, but dementia is not part of the normal aging process. You're going to mentally start to forget things the older you get. You are going to physically have a harder time doing things than you used to. But dementia is an umbrella term for cognitive impairment involving 100 different diseases. So could you misplace your glasses at the age of 58 and go, what did I do with my glasses? Or, I can't find my car keys. That's normal. Gee whiz, I put my backpack glasses in the refrigerator, my briefcase in the oven. That's not normal.
So, okay.
There's a big indicator there. But once you start having trouble recalling people's names, especially those that are close to you, that's kind of your red flag where you might want to go write down your symptoms and then mention those to a professional.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, I've learned a lot in the last minute. And, so let me take a little bit of a detour and let me thank you again for doing this podcast, because at one point I had invited you and you had said to me, no, those days are over. So if I recall, and I also want to point out that you reversed that. I did not chase you, so to speak, and I'm grateful that you did. But there was a couple of reasons. I mean, you were a stand-up comedian for a period of time, and I know I pride myself on being very witty and quick and glib, and it hurts me to my heart when I'm not able to do that in a moment or when I think of something phenomenal to say afterwards. And I don't know if that thought process was going through your mind as far as having a conversation like this, but also, did you not tell me that English is your second language?
I was not. I'm Ireland is my native, the Gaelic. And when I started this process, I grew up in Texas, and I learned to speak Spanish. Spanish is my secondary language. English is my primary. Yes,
okay.
When I developed dementia, the interesting part was I struggled very hard processing English. But the part of me that has the ability to speak Spanish was not impacted in my brain. So that, to me, still to this day, is the easier language for me to process, read, think, speak. And thank goodness I live in South Texas, because that comes in handy quite often. So if I was in Boston, we'd be in trouble. But this has been an absolutely amazing journey. Now I've learned quite a few exercises to keep that English portion of my brain still active. But the reason I was kind of hesitant was I do live in an assisted living facility. I am no longer allowed to work or to drive a car. My days of being able to get up on stage confidently with a microphone in front of an audience, those days are gone, because
I never had those days, the confidence
part. I love it. But dementia is a roller coaster where you've got days like today, which, wow, did you get lucky. This is what I call a clear good day. But I also have those bad days where it is a phenomenal struggle. Not so much anymore to remember my name. The medication helps with things like that. But to be able to process things and not maybe slip into speaking Spanish while I'm trying to come up with a word in English.
Mm. Wow. Wow. Brian LeBlanc came on the podcast, and he is a fairly successful speaker, and his whole thing is living well with dementia, and
And he's told me the same thing. He's actually told me some of the most difficult conversations and relationships he's had since he's gotten his diagnosis is with people that challenge him and say, you don't have dementia, you know, and it's just, and he'll say, yeah, well, that's on a good day. He goes, I've had days where I walk into a door, and then when I walk out, I have no idea where I am, and I completely decompensate. And that can be right after giving a eloquent speech for 45 minutes.
Brian is a wonderful, wonderful individual, incredible speaker. He's got early onset Alzheimer's. And Alzheimer's is the number one form of dementia as far as the most common. Vascular is number two. But we can share stories, he and I, of, hey, comparisons between, hey, this is what happens. And we do agree that that one stigma, and there's quite a few stigmas associated with our disease, which is why we're both so open about it, is to try to eliminate that stigma of, I have dementia. Well, it doesn't mean I have the inability to think or speak. It doesn't have the ability inability to not care, to not be able to accomplish things. Those stigmas are quite the most frustrating part about the disease, and we hear it so often. Well, you don't seem like you have dementia, or my favorite is, well, you don't look like you have dementia. The third eyeball in my head, purple antennas. Yeah. What exactly were you looking for that I disappointed there?
Yeah. I Jeff Charlebois is a gentleman that I did comedy with like 25, 30 years ago, and we did a fundraiser, and I had him on the podcast. Jeff had a spinal injury. He's a very high-functioning quadriplegic. To those that don't know the difference, you would assume he's paraplegic, but he's technically a quadriplegic, and he's still a performing comedian, and one of his jokes is that, you know, somebody will say to him, yeah, I met this guy the other day. He's in a wheelchair. Do you know him? And, you know, it's like because they're in a wheelchair, they know each other. But I am thrilled to hear that you and Brian know one another. And I'm not surprised. The network and the community of, you know, advocates for dementia is really a very tight-knit community.
Well, you know, and I think my Facebook group, which I also have a version of it on LinkedIn, I also have a blog dedicated towards making more cities in Texas dementia-friendly cities, part of Dementia-Friendly USA. So this has been I have connected with so many people around the world who either have the disease or are professional caregivers who own assisted living or nursing care facilities, memory care facilities. So it is kind of funny that I sit back sometimes and realize my group of friends is now encompasses 59 countries, and we all have something in common. We're all fighting the fight against dementia.
Yeah. That's incredible, the reach that you've achieved. It's kind of like one of those adages that you don't, you know, trying harder does not necessarily get you somewhere, whereas trying, you know, humbly and honestly and genuinely will. I mean, you started with such small beginnings just wanting to do well, and the world sensed that, and now you're in 59 countries. That's an incredible reach.
You know, and it's something I really am proud of it. There are times where, because I take a lot of personal questions from people saying, Grandma was just diagnosed with Lewy body dementia, or, you know, we had to put Grandpa in a home because he had frontotemporal lobe dementia. What can we expect next? And so I answer anywhere between 50 to 100 questions every single week trying to guide people through. But at the same time, I also sit back and say, if these people only knew that this morning, I woke up at 2 a.m. and walked down the hallway of my facility in my underwear because I forgot what time it was and I forgot to put on pants. Maybe they wouldn't listen to me as closely as they do. maybe there would be that one little hesitant of, well, this guy's nuts, which, you know, so I say this is a blessing that I'm still able to do what I am able to do with the disease.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think we all have great things in us, and we all have flaws in us even without dementia. And it's perfectly reasonable to me that someone could be in one moment an expert and in another moment very vulnerable and very flawed. I think that's almost poetic, to be honest. I'm still amazed at the hippopotamus story. And you know, when I do a live podcast, the give and take, the step in, step out, it's much more smooth. And on the phone, it's difficult. But I was compelled somewhere in there to talk about, you know, my defender of caregivers is embodied by a bear. And the idea is that Doc, the defender of caregivers, is a bear that is really my alter ego, and he is calm and rational, and we can talk to each other. And, you know, I've had many of people joke about how that, you know, really is like a hallucination or what have you, and I was trying to find a parallel there, but it's very intentional the way I created him, because it makes sense to me. It may not to others, and it may not make sense to you that you can be both an expert and vulnerable, but I think it does to the people that listen to you. And are you able to go through those moments and then hold on to enough of them to learn more about the next time you're going to have a conversation, or is it like two different experiences?
There is actually a chapter in my book that I titled Good versus Evil. And the question that I propose in that chapter and discuss is, which is worse for the person with dementia, to be in that moment of brain fog or be out of that moment of brain fog and know that that moment existed? Tell us story about when I was in the hospital, the beautiful woman that I was dating at the time came by the hospital to see me and check up on me, and she went to my apartment and brought me some personal belongings so that I would be more comfortable. And when she came, she sadly enough caught me on a bad day, and I had no idea who this woman was.
Oh, wow.
I was a little concerned that she had broken into my apartment and got my stuff. But one of the things that she brought me was a blue heart that had silver around it. It was a Christmas ornament that she and I had bought for our first Christmas together. And I remembered that ornament, and she talked to me about it while I was in the hospital. And again, I had no idea who she was. And she said, "Well, do you remember this?" And I said, "Yes, I remember the girl that gave this to me. I loved her so much. Have you met her? She's fantastic."
Oh,
well,
wow.
Days later, I was kind of came back around and I was clear again, and I saw that ornament in my hospital room, and I thought, oh my gosh, she was here. So I called her up on the phone and I apologized profusely. I said, "I am so sorry, because I can only imagine I forgot you." And I know somewhere in the back of my mind, I didn't forget you. I did remember you, but I probably acted like I didn't. But the key phrase was, I'm still in here. Regardless of the way that my actions are, I'm still in here. And so that's when it occurred to me that I don't know which was harder, being having that clarity and remembering that I'd forgotten somebody that I loved, or not having that clarity and not being able to remember and just being taken aback by that sweet, kind person, that stranger, who brought me that Christmas ornament.
That is just a mind-blowing story to hear. I hear over and over again, like, I'm an expert on what you're going through. I was going to say that thing. I'm still here. I've heard many people say that, and I've told many people they're still in there. You just have to stay in the moment and give it more time and the processing. I mean, the dots may connect. They may align. Don't be, you know, what people seem to try and do is they don't connect this way, so they come at another approach, and maybe that'll work. And the real approach is to just slow down and be in the moment. But that whole idea of what's worse, being in the fog or knowing that you've been in the fog, I imagine at certain times both of them are just terrifying.
I would have to say so, yes, because and I try to make sure that I tell those stories in my Facebook group and when I go and talk to people at meetings, because they need to hear the personal side of this is, I get it. You know, if you as a caregiver gets frustrated with that person with dementia, we understand. We're frustrated with us too. So we get it. We understand that the behaviors might seem odd to caregivers, but they also seem odd to us. And we just don't have the ability to control them sometimes.
Yeah. It's like this, it's like a organic argument is an analogy I'm trying to draw, and this might go off the rails, but I know how mortified I am, and I've helped other people through conversations where they had an epiphany or an awareness that they misperceived a comment or a conversation, and they acted poorly as a result of not perceiving it accurately. I mean, I do it all the time. I'm an emotional person, and I like to think that I'm a positive person, but sometimes I have responded negatively or too strongly because I've misperceived what's going on around me. And it just appalls me when I become aware that there was that disconnect and therefore not the best of behavior on myself. And you describing this and the section of the book again was where you did this story?
Yes, in a good chapter called Good Versus Evil. Meaning, what's a good day versus a bad day? What's it like? And which one is actually worse? And of course, I leave the question out there for people to consider, because it's a matter of personal opinion. Which would you prefer to have? Lack of memory or remembering that you couldn't remember? And it's an interesting question that there truthfully is no answer to. But
it
is something that people need to consider, this because of where dementia is headed, and it's a scary place.
Yeah, I mean, the philosophical debate, getting away from dementia for a minute, is, you know, we all have a due date within us or an end date within us, and if you could be told what your end date is, would you want to know? You know, would you want to know, or would you just want to go through things differently? I'm really going to have to sit quietly with what you just shared and think about it at some point. But I'd really like to read about it. We got to get this book published. I mean.
Well, you know, the interesting part about it was that was part of my research when the doctor said that you have VAD and we're going to arrange for you to talk to a psychiatrist about the dying process, which was a complete disaster because the psychiatrist that I spoke to had no sense of faith. He had just the worst gloom and doom attitude. And here I was, a pretty strong sense of faith. I was a stand-up comedian. I'm positive about as much as I can possibly be and try to find humor all the time. And so he and I together, it just did not work. It was not a great conversation. But however, since I have a warped side to me, I had a blast playing with that guy. We just, I absolutely turned his world upside down. But we talked about death and dying. And it turns out that, and, you know, the extensive research has done this, that everybody's going to do that. Some people take a little longer to get around to it, but everybody's going to do it. But nobody really wants to talk about it. And I was interested to find out the number one fear in America is not the fear of death. It's the fear of public speaking. So as the joke goes, most people at a funeral would much, much rather be in the casket than delivering the eulogy. So that kind of blew my mind. Now, with vascular dementia, it's not like Alzheimer's. Alzheimer's, you get anywhere 20, 30, maybe 40 years you can live with Alzheimer's. But with vascular dementia, the average is anywhere between 4 and 8 years. So I do kind of know, hey, this is about what's going to happen. I kind of know when my thing's going to get stamped. But that doesn't mean I won't get hit by a bus tomorrow. So I've got two choices. I can either think about 8 years from now, or I can think about today making a difference. And I would much rather think about today than 8 years from now. But I'm not. I think it's kind of been a nice advantage in the fact that I'm not really worried about it anymore. And I don't know if I can say that 10 years ago if I had the same attitude.
Yeah, well, it's a blessing that you're there. I don't know if you had to work to get there or if it's just a part of maturity or if it just naturally came to you because of your, I do believe in, you know, personality traits. I believe in the caregiver personality and I believe in, you know, just the desire to pursue comedy. I think that there's probably a positivity and a bent towards looking at things that way. But, you're a better man than I. I don't know that I could, I could get there, the way that you have. It's really very impressive and you are doing good in the meantime. I mean, there's no doubt about it.
Go ahead. It does remind me of, when I was married, you know, your wife opens up the refrigerator and she goes, "Oh, look at this. Whatever is in this container, I think it's spoiling. Will you taste this just to make sure?" And as a dutiful husband, you do that. You put that bite in your mouth and you go, "Yes, whatever that was, and I can't tell whether it was meat or cake or meat cake or I don't know what that was, but I just ate it because she told me that's what I needed to do." It's the same process of, can you handle the thought of dying? Well, if you would stick whatever was in that Tupperware container in your mouth, then when it comes down to it and you're faced with, you got to do it, you just take it and move on. So it is something that I think everybody can handle. It is deep inside of you. And especially, and I personally do believe that those of us with a sense of humor will be able to make it just a little bit easier. One of my favorite comedians, and I pay homage to him a little bit in my book, was Red Skelton. And Skelton, he had a quote, "Never take life too seriously, you'll never get out of it alive." Yeah. And I live by that quote. I think that just is so deep, funny, and profound, and it's wonderful.
Yeah, one of my favorite ones was W.C. Fields, who said, "Sooner or later you're going to have to smile, so you might as well get it over with."
Exactly.
So do you want to take a crack at, you can pass if you'd like, because as you said at the beginning, By the way, I believe that you are a caregiver because I look at how you're spending what you've already described as being a limited amount of time. You're spending it on sharing your story with others for their benefit, and certainly you get some benefit as well. But I think that qualifies for a caregiver personality, and I was wondering if you might want to take a crack. This is where I ask a long question and let you get ready for a "you might be a caregiver if" statement. Would you like to take a crack at coming up with a "you might be a caregiver if" statement that would be either be funny or you know, brutally honest or just super, super serious, but whatever you want. Would you like to take a stab at it?
I would love to take a stab at it. Now, here's the problem. You might be a caregiver if you actually don't know these statistics, that approximately 15 million people are unpaid caregivers for somebody with Alzheimer's. And that's just Alzheimer's. And around 60% of those caregivers are women. Many caregivers over the age of 65, and they've got their own health concerns. But they are now that sandwich generation caregiver, and about 40% of caregivers have that feeling of depression, 60% due to the fact that the stress is just unreal. But the scariest part above that, I think, is the fact that where, again, as I mentioned, where dementia is headed, that in according to the World Health Organization, by 2050, that's just 30 years from now, 152 million people are going to have dementia in the world. 152. Now, to put that into perspective, the current population of the United States is 329 million. So if you can imagine half of America, the equivalency of half of America will have dementia. That's staggering, but the statistic that I think that I'd love to make sure everybody understands is right now only 1 in 4 people who have Alzheimer's disease have been diagnosed.
Yeah.
And that's according to Alzheimer's Disease International. So those people who are caregivers, you might be a caregiver if you are so busy taking care of someone else, you forget to take care of yourself. And I can tell you, as a person who gets care from a full staff of caregivers, please put that mask on your face first, breathe in the oxygen, and then give care. But take care of yourself.
Yeah.
Gosh, well, I was hoping for something funny. That sucks.
No, it's fine. You know, I mean, humor has to come. The Laugh Doctor Clifford Kuhn was the first official podcast I ever did, and I have no idea where that was, and it was done so crudely from a standpoint of technology. But he did a lot of work with Jerry Lewis on the telethon, and he's a psychologist and actually psychiatrist, and he says that humor, you know, isn't being funny. It's being willing to be funny. It's being available to be funny. To pressure yourself to always, you know, have a one-liner or be funny is just that. It's pressure. And I think it's, you know, I think it's beautiful that you paid a tribute to the caregivers out there. It is a hugely misunderstood number of people that are going to need this care and people that are already providing it. And half of these caregivers out there would argue with you that they're a caregiver. They still think they're just a spouse or a loved one or a sibling. And that's which makes it very hard for them to take care of themselves because they think that they're just doing what they're supposed to do and they don't recognize the incredible service that they're providing to someone else.
Right. Completely agree.
Yeah. So while we're on that subject then, what would you say to someone that's at that moment? I talk about awareness, acceptance, and allowance, becoming aware that you're a caregiver, accepting that things in your life are going to have to change for you to, you know, survive this thing, because in the end, that is the goal. The caregiver should survive it, allowance. How can you ensure that you have people around you, whoever they may be? So when we go back to that beginning phase of awareness, what advice would you give to someone that is beginning their caregiver's journey or maybe already began it and doesn't even know it yet?
I think as we start to deal with an aging population, as we deal with a population of baby boomers actually crossing over that line, and since you and I are the same age, we both qualify, we're right there on that cusp of boomers, you have to understand, we're going to need help. I think the number one advice I've got for caregivers is, and I have an entire chapter in my book that is one line, and it says, don't try this journey alone. I don't know how, but you have to have a support team. Reach out to the Alzheimer's Association. Reach out to other family members. Reach out to your community, area council for aging. There are so many different resources, but you cannot do this alone.
Yeah.
The level of stress that you will build up, what the frustrations you will feel, all of that, first of all, comes from most of the time lack of knowledge. But second of all, the fear of what you're facing. And there are enough people now who can help. And that was the purpose of reaching out to my Facebook group and creating that dementia family, the friends and caregivers, so that we collectively are there for people to help them get through this process. No question is too small. No question is too silly. And I have been asked some very silly questions. But, my favorite, and bless his heart, was from someone who, and I posted this in the group anonymously. He said, I have a problem. I wanted to provide my grandma some happiness. She lives with us. I'm an in-home caregiver. So we bought her a fish tank in her room. And for some reason, she likes to take the fish out and play with them. And a lot of times we can't find them. So we have stripped the entire room. We've moved her to another room because we can't find the fish. And he said, what do I do? And I said, well, I think I would take her to a doctor and check to see if she might not be, consuming them. Maybe she gets hungry and realizes she likes fish. There's a part of her brain that still says, I enjoy seafood. So you have provided her with free seafood. So these are the kind of things you have to step into what I call dementia world. Step into their world and think, don't think logically, think like they may be thinking.
Yeah. Wow. That's fantastic. She might just be having a college hallucination. I once drank a fish in a beer shot. Not proud of it, but that did happen once in my past.
I'm from Texas, and I cannot begin to tell you how many worms in a bottle of tequila I've consumed, so it's okay.
Yeah. So I'm curious, and please forgive me for, I know the comedian in you will forgive me, but did you ever give the hippopotamus a name, and did he ever come back to you, or was it just that one incident?
No, I did not ever name the hippopotamus. However, I did give him a dedication in my book because had it not been for his unselfish inspiration, the book never really would have been written. And I get a chance to talk about the hippopotamus. So maybe one of these days I'm going to have a contest. Please name my hippopotamus. Because he's deserving of it. I did, however, at one point give him the honorary title of doctorate. So it is Dr. Hippopotamus at this point, but no actual name associated to it.
Well, you got a hippopotamus named Doctor. I got a bear named Doc. I mean, somehow we gotta get your book published, and we gotta get the bear and the hippopotamus together. Sounds like a joke. Two comedians, a hippopotamus and a bear, walk into a bar.
And well, a rabbit, because you gotta have a rabbit in there so you can say two comedians, a priest, and a rabbit walk into a bar with a hippopotamus, and the rabbit goes, I think I'm a typo, but anyway.
Well, I've really enjoyed this, and I really appreciate you reconsidering it, and you did not speak Spanish once during this podcast. So congratulations on that.
And, gracias por todo, porque es muy fácil. Whoops.
Now, is there one more time? Can you let us know where we can find you? Where we can find your Facebook group? Just whatever you would like us to know about how we can learn more about you before we start to say goodbye to one another today.
The Facebook group is, if you're on Facebook, it is called Dementia Family Friends and Caregivers. And if you research groups and you type in the word dementia, due to the size of the group now, that's generally the first one that pops up.
Okay.
I'm also available with the same group name on LinkedIn, Dementia Family Friends and Caregivers. And then for those who are in the Texas area, there's another Facebook group that is focused on what's going on with dementia in Texas, and in the process of trying to make more cities dementia-friendly cities. And that is Dementia Corpus Memory Cafe.
Okay. I should have dug in a little bit more on how to make a city or any environment more dementia-friendly, and maybe we'll do that again when we get together another time. But I feel very blessed to have spent this time with you. It was very insightful. Yes, it was funny, so if you feel like you didn't rise to that level, you clearly did. And
should have said that, because I have to send you an invoice. That ruined it.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, I know what comedians typically get paid, so you can send it to me. I'll gladly pay it.
You got some pocket change. That's awesome.
Yeah. So this has been a blast. You keep on doing what you're doing. James, you said it before. I see it. You're still in there. This was very insightful. It's a blessing to the listeners. I hope you'll share this with your people, because it's something you should be proud of. I'll make sure you have the link when this goes live. And James Hamilton, you might be a caregiver. Thank you for caring.
That's awesome. And thank you for doing this, because speaking for those who get taken care of, this makes a huge difference what you're doing. So please keep it up. Thank you.
Yeah, well, thank you for caring, James. Have a great night.
You too.
Wow, folks, that blew me away. James and I stayed on the phone for a little while afterwards, and he continued at that high level of self-expression and no delays in finding his words and going from one topic to the other. And the whole time I'm sitting there going, I have such a hard time believing, and I don't really mean it that way, I know it to be true, but that there are times where he truly doesn't know where he is. He'll just open his eyes, blink, and he's literally lost in his own environment. And gosh, such honesty, such compassion, such bravery. And I just can't thank him enough for doing this. He actually, at the end of the call, was giving me counsel. Damn, I got to stop doing that. I'm supposed to be some kind of an expert, and I am definitely gaining more than I'm giving through these podcasts. And I thank you for listening. I hope you will share these with others. Please give us a 5-star review, and let us know what you think. But most importantly, share this with others that you think might benefit from these caregiver stories and the Caregivers Podcast. And rest assured, if I have anything to do with it, I'm going to help James get that book published. And I'm pretty good at doing books that make no money, so I can help him with his goals. Okay, everyone, go out there, do what you do, be good, and honor yourself as you care for others, because you might be a caregiver. Thank you for caring. Bye-bye now.